Wilson looking to drive, blows by his man. Right hand layup, good. And down. Here's a lob. There's the slam. Brady Dick on the throwdown.
Well, here we are for another edition of the Jayhawker Podcast. March Madness is upon us. I am Greg Gurley, along with Wayne Simeon. Jayhawker Podcast brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. It's a lot of fun, right, buddy? We had a little nice run in the weekend and end the way we wanted to in Kansas City, but great turnout, great atmosphere. I thought we played some really good ball and just kind of lost steam come Saturday night.
Yeah, it's at that special time of year, March Madness that everyone loves. The Madness has already started, obviously, in conference tournaments and the selection shows and a lot of controversy and hot-button topics throughout the weekend and into Selection Sunday. And so here we are for another exciting one.
Let's stick with the Big 12 tourney before we get to the madness that is the field of 68 and everything that went on yesterday, as you referenced, a lot to absorb that we saw in the selection show. But, you know, as we look at coming off a loss last Saturday or two Saturdays ago in Austin, had some concerns, but I don't think they were big concerns because I don't think we put our best foot forward against Texas, and they did, is what it is. We come back out, do a nice job against West Virginia, and then against Iowa State, we do a really nice job because, as we know, they show up in Kansas City. They like to get the heck out of Iowa and get to Kansas City. They take over downtown. Our fans kind of go back and forth. Not a whole lot of campers down there that just hang out, but, man, those Iowa State people, they go through some beer down there in Westport and Power and Light, and it wasn't – I'll give our fans credit, though. That crowd, it was more Jayhawks than there were Iowa State. I know that sounds crazy that we're even saying that because, yeah, we're here. Our biggest alumni base is in Kansas City, and theirs is 3, 4, 5 hours away. But we know how they travel. They've had a good year. But, again, I'll give our guys, our fan base credit. They showed up in a big way.
Yeah, they really did, man. That was such a fun environment there in Kansas City. They do a great job with the tournament. I can't think of a better place in Big 12 country than Kansas City to be able to host it. And it has nothing to do with the proximity to Lawrence, but just the setup with the T-Mobile Center, and it's it still has this nice shine from it. And then the Power and Light District, which is great right there across. And then Municipal Auditorium, just a couple blocks away, which, you know, you and I'll agree that is pretty outdated, but it is pretty exciting to have both the men's and women's tournaments running side by side. And man, that environment on Friday night with KU versus Iowa State was probably one of the best I've seen in the T-Mobile Center. I actually prefer that Iowa State go deep into the Big 12 tournament for the reason that you just mentioned, because they travel so well. They bring tons of energy to the city, in the arena, outside the arena. And I'll even go all the way back to Chicago of last year when we were up there for the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight. When Iowa State was playing Miami in that Sweet 16 game, it was significantly in favor of the crowd. Even though we have a great alumni base in Chicago, the crowd was significantly in favor of the Iowa State fans. And I was actually concerned that had they have beaten Miami up there in the United Center, that actually would have felt like a home court advantage for Iowa State, again, because the Cyclone traveled so well. And so it was a great environment there on Friday. And I will say, and you and I both know, look, they were the hottest team in the Big 12, I think, during the last like two-game stretch. You know, going into Waco on senior day, again, being able to take on one of the hottest and most, you know, efficient point scoring backcourts.
And you go back right before they went to Baylor, they had just lost two straight at home to Oklahoma and West Virginia. Mm-hmm. So they were the opposite of hot until they played Baylor back to back and became the hottest team.
Yeah, yeah. So they had a lot of momentum going on there, obviously with those back-to-back wins over Baylor. And, of course, their fan base being there, which didn't disappoint, as we saw in that game Friday night.
You know, on Tuesday night, Brian Haney and I have a Big 12 announcers dinner with all the different announcing crews from around the league. And you brought up Kansas City and how great of a job they do. Kathy Nelson at the Kansas City Sports Commission and everyone involved in putting on the Big 12 tournament and then NCAA regional here in a couple of weeks. And from Tony Caridi at West Virginia to Wyatt Thompson and at K-State and the guys at Waco, John Morris, they go, they better not move it. We've tried to move it. It was in Dallas. It was in Oklahoma City. Not the same. Dallas for sure was a bogey. Oklahoma City was okay. There's just so much going on. Our city embraces it. You talk about Iowa State. It's a lot easier to drive from Iowa to Kansas City than it is Iowa to Dallas. And they're a fan base that travels, but you're gonna shave off some of those people if you move it. So not that I even think they're going to move it, but hopefully we put on a good enough show for our new commissioner, even though the weather sucked.
It was freezing last year too.
True. But this was his first year of it. He brought in one of your favorite musical guests, Fat Joe, and then Shaquille O'Neal was doing his thing in the Power and Light. So he's trying to mix it up. There was definitely some media members that were upset because they sold courtside tickets. Instead of the two rows of press row on the floor, they moved a lot of the print and internet reporters up to the so-called hockey press box, which is in the ceiling, essentially. And so that didn't go very well, but the fan bases that got to sit in those seats really enjoyed it, got a much different view of closer to the action. So, you know, we take care of business against Iowa State. And Kevin, who was limited in that game, it was a jump ball or whatever, and he tweaked his back, and they thought it was the best precautionary move to, which I agree with. I didn't think that the championship game was going to be as important as the committee made it be. And I think that's the way our coaching staff and our medical staff agreed, because it was the right thing to do, because next week's more important. Let's just be honest. As much as we think, maybe if you ask an Iowa State fan, they don't agree, but to us, we understand that the next week is more important. You don't want to jack around with backs. You want to make sure they're healthy so he doesn't play. It came back to bite us because we were a completely different team without Kevin McCullough. We saw glaring examples of that multiple times. I mean, very rarely throughout the year do we see guys just get uncontested layups at the rim in a half-court set. That first half, it happened four or five times. Second half, it happened several times. That's Kevin McCullough doing extra things. You and I have talked about it at length. He just, even though he's not supposed to be there, he sees it coming two steps before it happens, and he shuts it down, or he gets a hand up, or he gets a steal. And this is taking nothing away from Joe or MJ or anybody else. Kevin's just built different.
He really is, and, you know, he's proven that to be true as we got a chance to talk to him a few episodes back. Being consistent in doing that at two different programs. It's in his DNA, kind of a hard-nosed, family background with his dad, you know, pushing him and coaching him back in San Antonio. He got a chance to hone and develop that even more at Texas Tech under Chris Beard and Mark Adams. And, of course, you know, that is a significant expectation that Coach Bill Self has on all of his players, is to do it on the defensive end. And so he was sorely, sorely missed. I agree with what you were saying, though a Big 12 tournament championship is important, it's a very difficult thing to do. I mean, three, maybe even four games in 4 days. Like, it's one of the most difficult things to do in college basketball. You're competing for a championship. So obviously everybody wants to be able to have that opportunity. You get to cut down nets and have the confetti fall on you just like you do at the end of April. So I don't want to minimize the importance of the Big 12 tournament or guys desire to compete in that. But in the grand scheme of things, particularly at Kansas, when you're defending national champions and you have a legitimate opportunity to defend that national championship, it's really tough to roll the dice on a nagging type of back issue that's bothered him most of the season when there isn't a lot of runway for him to get healthy during the most important time of year. So I thought that it was the right decision to shut him down, though I hated to see our medical staff as busy as they were this weekend with both one of our players and then, of course, our coach.
Yeah, that's something we haven't even addressed yet and definitely needs to be discussed. Coach Self, as the world knows, was dealing with some stuff all weekend, was unable to coach, and I just was able to visit with him. He's doing great. He was in the hospital for, you know, four nights, and that's no fun. We've all done it, and definitely took a lot out of him, but he's back and will be back. And I don't think we saw his impact on this team. I'm trying to think of the best way to say it because Norm Roberts did a great job. This is not taking anything away from Norm, but it's just
who would have thought the four games in the beginning of the year under the self-imposed suspension would have been preparing us for something down the road, like preparing us for like the unthinkable, like coach not right. being here. Mom, I mean,
right.
I thought that was unbelievable.
Well, and it happened so fast. I mean, it was Wednesday afternoon. I was up in the team room at the hotel having a conversation with him, which is 24 hours away from not even 24 hours away from playing. And Norm gets told that, hey, you're coaching tomorrow. So that just takes a different makeup. And you know, we'd love Norm, big time coach. St. John's for 5+ seasons. He's been around. And so I don't think we really missed a step. And by no means, I mean, I will say coaches get way too much credit, way too much criticism, the old cliche. But I also understand that we have the best coach in college basketball. And there is a difference when he's not there. But moving forward, he's doing great. He's going to be fine. And we're so lucky to have him back. As we film this right now, it's Monday. We go to Ames, Des Moines tomorrow, and he'll be on that trip. And just happy to have him back.
Yeah, certainly. It could have been worse. And it's interesting that kind of a movie that you and I grew up watching, and we joked a little bit about it. Major League. When they had their skipper go down, and a lot of it had to do with the stress concerning being a Major League Baseball manager, and just the scene of him being holed up in the hospital, undergoing some heart recovery, but sneaking in the little transistor radio to be able to listen to the game there, and having him jump up and down on the bed, and the nurses coming in there trying to calm him down. That was the imagery that I had in my mind. During all three of our games there in Kansas City as Coach was recovering. I don't know if that was the case or not, but I kind of got a chuckle out of thinking about that in my head.
Or kind of also, like, remember Dennis Hopper and Hoosiers when he went nuts when they won the state championship?
Oh, yeah.
Brought him in, put him in.
Both classic sports movies, man.
Put him in a straight jacket or whatever they did. Huge piece to our puzzle. As we move forward into March, deeper into March, now that the Big 12 is one last note on this, I'll tell you, it was interesting. After I go back and do the interview with Norm Roberts, after the Texas loss, I go back out. It's probably, I don't know, 30 minutes after the game. Texas is still out there. Their entire team, their entire staff was out there on that podium in an empty T-Mobile Center, taking pictures of about everything you possibly take pictures of. And I guess this is kind of a, on my part, I guess a little bit of a dig is like, well, you know, we've done this so much that we, you know, celebrate, take pictures, but you get out of there to get going. But I don't know, it's just an observation that I noticed as I went back out there to do a segment with David Lawrence.
Yeah, no, it is. And I don't fault them for that. You know, no. It is a special accomplishment. One that I've never even gotten a chance to experience, even on the good teams that I was on. I'm not sure.
You never won a Big 12 tournament?
A Big 12 tournament. Yeah, we never won a Big 12 tournament. And so I get them, you know, obviously want to celebrate that. And, you know, it's interesting. And let's tip our hats to them. They handed it to us. Yeah. On Saturday, they gave us all we wanted, and then some. It's interesting to me that even as TJ Warren, or I'm sorry, Rodney Perry has done a great job in leading that group throughout this year in absence of their head coach, he still isn't considered a front runner for that job. And I'm sure that is motivation for him and those guys that he's coaching to be able to step up and to give a little bit more, to have a little extra chip on their shoulder, or to stay a little bit longer in the T-Mobile Center and celebrate and enjoy that moment, because they don't know what the future looks like for him as head coach. So I don't necessarily fault them for that. It is interesting, though, the more successful he is, the more difficult he's making it on the UT administration to go and find someone else, because clearly, as you look across the college landscape, and this is a time that's really interesting for guys like you and I, because not only are we watching the day-to-day action on the court, but we're also following the coaching carousel. Right? I mean, tons of jobs, good jobs opened up over the weekend. Some are actually being filled today, but of course the one that a lot of people have their eye on is that Texas job, is now the Texas Tech job. You know, what type of domino effects is that going to have across our league and across the entirety of college basketball? So to me, that's as entertaining as anything. And I'll preface, you can say it's entertaining when you certainly know that you've got your guy in the right seat, who's there for a long time, like we have the luxury of having it in Coach Self. But it is interesting, and I wouldn't be surprised if that was a big factor and player in how well Texas is playing and even extending those celebrations at the T-Mobile Center in Kansas City after that tournament championship.
I tell you what, I don't know Rodney Terry, met him a couple times, but I give him a ton of credit. Number one, taking over a job in November isn't easy. He took over an extremely talented team, but that can go one of two ways when they're met with adversity, and he's done an unbelievable job. And I thought, I don't know if you caught his interview after they won, first thing out of his mouth was a message to Bill Self, which to me shows you how much Bill is respected in our league. Bob Huggins, TJ, then Rodney Terry. I mean, they just won the Big 12 tournament, pretty much solidified a 2 seed, long shot for a 1 seed. And the first thing out of his mouth was, hey, we just want Bill to get better, on and on and on. I thought that was really cool. And you're right. He keeps winning. And if they don't hire him, it's going to be a very interesting offseason for him. And is he retained or what? I mean, I don't know what else you could ask him to do. I mean, they were right there in the toughest league in America. And another thing, after we lost, I was on that Crimson and Blue Line show with post-game show with David Lawrence and Sean Kellerman, and people were calling in and they were just talking like, just couldn't believe that we got beaten the way we did. And granted, it was a little higher than I thought, the deficit. But guess what? Texas has good players. They're really good. We're good. We got beat, and we didn't get beat by 20s was a lot, but we're right there. You know, things don't go our way, partly self-induced, but most of it was them. And that's a good basketball team that made a lot of shots.
Yeah, certainly a good team to keep an eye on during the big dance. And I don't know, how about you, Greg? Are you like me and maybe some others that once the field is set for the NCAA tournament, you turn into a cheerleader for teams that are coming out of the Big 12, or is it KU only, or what is kind of your sentiment there? I like to cheer for the Big 12. I like to see them take some big and deep tournament runs.
Well, that segues us into our conversation at lunch, Big 12 prowess. All they talked about was how good the Big 12 was. I'm a firm believer in, I want to see anybody in the Big 12 win when they don't play us. I want to see us legitimize our league. I want to see deep runs by multiple teams. And if we face one of them, I want to kick them. I want to kick them while they're down. I want to win, just like you do. But for us to pound our chest about our league and the quad ones and all that, best league in the last 20 years, like we heard Dick Vitale say, we need to back it up. And we need to have four teams in the Sweet 16. We need to have several teams in the Elite Eight. It'd be great to get two in the Final Four. Then, okay, we believe you. But, you know, you hear Bill Walton. When I got back home on Saturday watching the UCLA-Arizona Pac-12 title game, we were referred to as a truck stop league. I didn't like that. Now, he's crazy anyway. I don't even know if he remembers he said it, but he says it several times. And if I hear him say Conference of Champions 47 more times, I mean, it's unbelievable how much he says Conference of Champions. It bugs me. But great for college basketball. Love him or hate him. We talk about him, whatever. But I don't like being called a truck stop league. Do you?
Yeah, I don't. And, you know, the NCAA tournament is a great opportunity to be able to do that. It's actually why I don't mind the midseason matchups like the Big 12 SEC Challenge or the Big 12 Big 10 Challenge, Big 10 ACC Challenge. What, you know, there's been a variety of those throughout college basketball, is because it does get a chance to maybe break up the monotony a little bit of the dog days of conference play, get you outside of your region, outside of your traditional schedule, and be able to go head to head with some opponents from the other conference. But yeah, I'll certainly be cheering for a lot of those both Big 12 teams. But you talked a little bit about beating your chest about the strength of the conference, which again we heard over and over and over again about how it's the toughest conference this year, maybe the toughest conference in several decades. But the air was let out of the room during Selection Sunday when seemingly the toughest conference in the country that produced the champion from that conference and overall one seed, should have been overall one seed, actually ended up being the third seed. That was pretty vexing to me, and it kind of let the air out of the room during Selection Sunday for a lot of people.
Yeah, and I wasn't a big fan of Chris Reynolds' explanation. I don't know if he was prepared for that question, even though you would think he would have been prepared for that, because everybody, even not just Kansans, were saying that Kansas was the overall number one seed. And then to have the weekend that we had, I don't necessarily fault them for putting Alabama number one overall. You know, it makes sense. I get it. If we were not, we got beat our last two games to Texas in a bad way. I get it. Last two times we played Texas, but not to be, once they put Alabama in the South, which was Louisville, you and I were texting before they made the announcement, like, all right, it's like we're in Kansas City, and we obviously jinxed it. You look at the numbers. We're comparing ourselves with Houston. Our record, 27-7. Their record, 31-3. Okay. Four less losses, four more wins. I get it. American Conference versus the toughest conference in America. Their net ranking was number one, and we were number nine. So obviously the net meant more to the committee. But the thing that everybody talked about all year was what? Quad one wins. 17-7 for Kansas. 7-2 for Houston. And then the one thing that we never talked about was what? The combination of quad one and quad two, which he brought up, which Houston had more combined. We only had four quad two games. So I'm not super smart, but I would think 17 quad one wins versus seven is better than the combination of quad one and quad two. Am I being dumb here?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's certainly a head scratcher to those.
I'm sorry. One last thing. Strength of schedule, Kansas, number one. Houston, 96.
What was that again? 96.
Four less than 100.
I was just making sure that I heard you correctly. That's pretty staggering. And again, a head scratcher from all those metrics that are thrown out there. Another explanation that was just as confusing was quality of losses. Have you ever been awarded anything for your quality of loss?
Like in second grade, we'd get like a Sunday or something if we lost by less.
Yeah, I don't know if that's the book it club, personal pan pizza, participation trophy type deal. But
to think about that is, so your number one overall seed, Alabama, I don't really have much of an argument with, but what did they do on January 28th? They played at Oklahoma.
And lost by 30.
A non NCAA tournament team that got, I don't know what place they ended up, but not in the top seven. They were eighth, ninth, I think they were 10th actually. Beat them by 30. So that's where I thought both sides of his mouth, they were kind of talking like, God, did somebody prep this guy?
Well, it's just pretty frustrating in the sense that everything that was discussed all throughout the year, all the metrics that you talked about, seemed not to carry the type of weight that they said they would. So I'm done with metrics from now to the rest of time. I'm not really going to be interested in following.
I thought you were a big time analytics guy. You're not.
I tried not to be, but when, you know, a lot of folks wanted to make it talking points throughout most of the college basketball season, I started to pay attention and to give some credit towards that. But as it pans out during Selection Sundays for both the men's program and our women's program, it's not all that it's cracked up to be, that's for sure.
So what it's going to do, it's going to encourage schools to do what? Not lose by a lot, I guess. So you don't play as good at teams, right? So you schedule the 96th ranked schedule, win all your games. And if you lose, you wouldn't lose by much because you're not playing as tough a schedule. So I'm going to go completely against the metrics. Now, we can debate this forever. It's not worth it.
At the end of the day, we're a one seed.
This right here is the most, and we say this all the time, you got to beat good teams to advance. You got to beat good teams to win a national title. I get it. What did I text you last night? I'd rather be pissed off and play with a chip on my shoulder than be comfortable. If we would have been in Des Moines, you like that, it's fair. If we would have been in Des Moines, which we're going to be in Des Moines, you know, it's a 3-hour drive down and back, and then it'd be a 1-hour drive to Kansas City. We're comfortable. We have more distractions. I'd say Vegas doesn't have distractions, but not as many, with just ease of getting there, our donor base. Vegas, we're going to be more of a, if we were to be fortunate enough to win a couple games, we're going to be a group. You know, there's going to be 500 of us or 1,000 of us, a bunch other than outside of Kansas City would have been, you know, comfort. So I like pissed off. I like chip on your shoulder. I like uncomfortable for us to play.
Yeah, I mean, the reality of it is again, I mentioned we're still a one seed, which is incredible. Thinking about the point production that we lost last year, we think about who we tipped the ball against or the national championship game. North Carolina, they're not even in the NCAA tournament field, which is astonishing as well. And look, the tournament is supposed to be hard. Like, you're supposed to be, that's why they pair the best teams against the best teams. Even looking at all four regions, I don't necessarily feel like there's an easy road anywhere, nor has there ever been, you know. And so we're going to put our hard hats on. We're going to get healthy. We're going to get to work. And we are going to head to Des Moines, like you said, maybe with a little bit of chip on our shoulder, but also with the title, not only as Big 12 champs, but as defending national champions. Until we, you know, until we defend it or bow out, that's still what we are, and so we still need to make sure that that we play and prepare accordingly for that.
Yeah, you know, thought we might get a little love for that. You know, does that push us over the edge? But obviously it didn't. So two games in Des Moines, hopefully. And then Norm Roberts said it best at the press conference, and well, he's being interviewed by Kenitra. It's a two-game tournament. We're going to Iowa to win a two-game tournament. Then we're going to come home, and we're going to regroup. We're going to do some laundry. We're going to, you know, do whatever we got to do to get comfortable, hop on a plane, and go to Vegas and win another two-game tournament. We were great at that last year, and we can be great at it again. I thought that rewarding UCLA and Gonzaga by staying in the West as the two and the three, also a little surprising, but that's who's going to be. We wouldn't play both of them, play one or the other. But remember last year, Wayne, when you and I were at McCarthy Hall for the Selection Sunday and we did a podcast, and I think you and I both were of the opinion that, you know, this bracket doesn't really bother me. And that was kind of the first time in many years that I looked at a bracket last year and I was like, you know, I don't see anybody on our quadrant that I'm that nervous about. Because what didn't we want last year, Wayne? We didn't want tall, long, athletic. And we got some big teams, Big Ten teams in there, and some Providences and Miamis. And we're like, all right. And it kind of worked out.
Yeah, I think it did. You know, obviously, you never want to overlook that first round game. That's certainly me speaking from experience, being on the team that lost to Bucknell in the first round. Those teams are there in the tournament for a reason. They're excited to play. They got a chip on their shoulder. They want to certainly make school history for themselves. And I will say this. This is something that felt a little bit different than last year. I think that because of the parity of the tournament and the participation in the brackets, if you are playing on a neutral floor and anyone outside of your home fan base, what do they want to see?
Upsets.
They want to see an upset. And so a lot of times in those environments, the neutral sites, okay, even though you might have a good fan base there, your fans might travel, you can still feel, I mean, there's always going to be pressure, but you can still feel like there's a little bit stacked against you when you're a higher seed because, you know, if the other opposing team's fans that are there in the area cheering on their school, they want to see you fall, especially if you're a number one seed. So it's important for our guys to stay ready, and which is why it's important that you talk about, Norm, man, getting that tight huddle together, kind of us versus them. That's why that type of mentality is so important during the whole month of March.
Well, we forgot to do this a minute ago, but we're going to have our call of the week because it came from the Big 12 tournament. And when we come back, we'll go into our dissection of our brackets, the matchups, what can happen in the first four. And then obviously we'll really dive into our bracket. But the call of the week that I picked, and you agreed with me, late in the first half against Iowa State, it was still a neck-and-neck game. I think they had just cut it to four. We had a rebound or a steal, and DeJuan got out on the break on the right side, does what he always does, where he kind of draws defense, pitches it back to KJ for the dunk. So listen to Brian Haney and Greg Gurley on our call of the week.
31-25 Jayhawks. Holmes with the ball for Iowa State. Here's a lob broken up by Wilson, taken away by KJ. Ahead to Joe, up to Juan, back to KJ. Wow, what ball movement. They share it and they throw it down with a two-handed Adams dunk.
Call of the week is brought to you by Kansas City Barbecue Store. Get all your barbecuing needs and accessories at kcbarbecuestore.com or go visit Dan at 119th Strange Line. They're an awesome location in Olathe where you can go and get the Gosney Patio Pizza Oven that is sold exclusively there. Call of the Week brought to you by Casey Barbecue Store.
It was late, and one of my patients was having trouble sleeping. He was feeling uneasy, he told me. I asked him, is there anything I can do to help? I'm pretty sure he's the only patient ever to ask me to dance at 2 a.m. But sometimes, being the best nurse I can be is just being the best person I can be.
Welcome back to the Jay Hawker Podcast, brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. Just kind of recapped the Big 12 tournament, had our call of the week. I want to pop up a little bit of what we did last week. Wayne obviously stayed at the Hilton President Hotel, downtown Kansas City, steps away from Power and Light, and the T-Mobile Center. Philip Strnad and his staff took great care of myself, the team, had this great team room. The rooms are awesome. You get a chance, get down to the President Hotel. They do an unbelievable job. Again, you can't beat the location. Going to a concert, going to the Midwest Regional, even though Kansas isn't in it, make sure you check out the Hilton President Hotel. Wayne, how many nights did you end up at the Drum Room?
Man, great, great location there. Every night dropping in. Love that place. It's great.
So on Wednesday, Wayne and I did our podcast with Jalen Wilson. So if you haven't had a chance to check it out, you can go to YouTube, Google, Spotify, Apple, find that. The Jalen Wilson Jayhawker podcast, he was outstanding. I mean, always says the right thing. He doesn't just give us one-word answers. He explains it. And I thought it was really enjoyable doing it with Jalen. We talked a lot about his mom and his dad, about his journey through adversity, some of which was self-inflicted, which he fessed up to. I mean, obviously, we know what happened, got the DUI, but he rebounded from that and became a better man, became a leader, won a national title, could have easily just said, you know what, I'm going to transfer, just like many kids do nowadays. That USC game in Indianapolis, I was there. It sucked. It was 2,000 people in the stands at Henkel Auditorium. He didn't play very well. Nobody played very well. And at a lot of places, guys would have just run, said, you know what, it's the coach's fault. It's the administrator's fault. It's the radio guy's fault. It's everybody's fault but my fault. And he kind of looked in a mirror, tested the NBA waters as he should, came back, and the next year won a national title. Was a leading scorer in the national title game. So check that out, Jayhawker Podcast with Jalen Wilson on wherever you get your podcasts. NCAA tournament, field of 68, kicks off, Tuesday, first four, Arizona State, Nevada, Texas Southern, Fairleigh Dickinson. Excuse me, am I doing this right? Yeah, Mississippi State, Pittsburgh, and Texas A&M, Corpus Christi, and Southeast Missouri State. So check those out, and then, you know, we can kind of gloss over, but we know the one seeds, Alabama, Houston, Kansas, and Purdue. I think we'll start with Alabama. Did you get a chance to watch their SEC title game?
No, I didn't get a chance to watch the title game. I think I watched them play against Missouri. That Saturday, and Missouri has certainly improved. As difficult as that is for me to give them credit, but real basketball is being played over there in terms of.
And that's an example of an example of Dennis Gates and Jerome Tang take over programs that were bad. Mm-hmm. They're bad. Obviously, they fired their coach. Transfer portal, you can get better in a hurry. Both of those guys proved it. Dennis Gates just got it. An extension at Missouri, hadn't even completed his first year, but obviously opened enough eyes and did a fantastic job. And he's a guy that's going to be around for a long time because I think his buyout was like $25 million or something, the way I read it. And I would imagine our friends to the west of us are going to probably try to do the same thing with Jerome Tang because, as Wayne mentioned earlier, the coaching carousel, the dominoes that are falling right now, I mean – Patrick Ewing, Mike Anderson, Mark Adams, who knows about Texas? And then once somebody takes it, it keeps on tipping. It sounds like Chris Beard is going to get the Ole Miss job. It sounds like a few other guys are kind of set. Everybody's talking about Rick Pitino at Georgetown or St. John's. And so it'll be very, very interesting and something Wayne and I talk about on a daily basis, the domino that is the head coaching.
Yeah, it is. And we'll see. We'll see how all that plays out. But again, it's nice to sit back and enjoy that when you're not in the coaching carousel. It can be dizzying and scary in a lot of ways. We've seen it on some other programs, but I'm glad.
It probably won't hurt, and it probably won't affect us unless I would say one guy on our staff is a possibility, young up-and-comer in Jeremy Case. So keep an eye out for that. And Wayne and I, as much as we'd hate to lose him, we understand how good he is. It was a great hire. Bill brought him back into the fold, elevated him after Jarence Howard left, and he's been awesome. I mean, Jeremy, if there's somebody out there looking to hire a guy that doesn't have any experience, what do we always say? Can't get experience until somebody gives you an opportunity. And that ain't going to be at Texas or Texas Tech, but it might be at a North Texas or a Stephen F. Austin or somewhere like that. You got to go cut your teeth somewhere and in order to get that next big job. And he's kind of down here as far as where he can go, but knowing Jeremy the way you and I both know him, he's destined to become a head coach soon and will be at an elite program, I think, in the next 6 to 10 years. Would you say that's a fairly accurate guess?
Yeah, well, I don't know about the timeline and what that would look like, but I can certainly say that he's ready. You know, one of the unique things about this place is that you don't leave a program like Kansas to go take a bad job somewhere else. You know, you've seen it all across college basketball, that rearing up to bite people in that, where you leave a top program to take a lower level job, you're fired in 3 years, maybe less, and it's tough to get back into that. And so there's no need for him to be impatient in terms of that. You know, obviously you're getting the chance to learn under the best in the land. You're given plenty of opportunity here. But it's only a matter of time until he's going to be an incredible head coach one day. And you know what? You don't always need to have, you know, head coaching experience at a lower level to get a great job. I mean, we saw that in our conference just last year. Jerome Tang, who's a longtime assistant for Scott Drew, who was patient, passed up on many of mid-major jobs that came across his desk over the years, was waiting for that right one. And then next thing you know, he ends up becoming Big 12 Coach of the Year during his first campaign at K-State. I think Jeremy has that type of upside, and we're lucky to have him.
Because what does Jerome Tang and Dennis Gates have in common? They're great recruiters. When you're a great recruiter and you go take over a Missouri or a Kansas State where they have two or three scholarship players when you walk in that door the first day, you can go out and use your relationships and say, all right, I got my button. I got my first job, and I want you to come play for me. So all the hard work that Jerome Tang did for 19 years at Baylor and Dennis Gates did under Leonard Hamilton is paying off because of their contacts. And Jeremy is as good as anybody, a people person that.
I'd agree with that. I certainly wouldn't want to limit Jeremy's ability just to being a recruiter. I mean, he's a hell of a coach. You know, I've seen him in scouting reports. I've seen him in late game situations. Even last year, he had the scout against Texas Tech in the Big 12 Tournament Championship. He had the Miami scout. He was a lead scout. So all the assistant coaches and Coach Self, you know, has an involvement and a part to play in that. He had the Carolina scout. And so he's cut his teeth. And I think he's got a real holistic, repertoire when it comes to developing guys on the court individually with a position group. He works with our guards, obviously recruiting and bringing great talent in. But I think he's got what it takes, late game adjustments, in timeouts, in huddles. I think he's a pretty well-rounded candidate and not just limited to recruiting.
I just wrote down something. Probably spelled it wrong. Holistic repertoire. Can you spell it?
Who are you, Pat Sajak? What's going on here?
Holistic Wepper. I can't say it. That's great. But you're right. You're not wrong. So we brought up Alabama. As I look at the South, I'd probably go chalk on that. The one versus the two in the Elite Eight, which is would be Arizona. If I look at stumbling blocks in the middle of that, Baylor's the three seed. And, man, from what I've seen of Baylor lately, I don't know. I would have said maybe Creighton 2 months ago, but they don't seem to be finishing strong. So I think Alabama and Arizona, and Alabama has some dudes. They got length. They shoot a ton of threes. That's the only thing that worries me about Alabama. And they can shoot themselves into a game, and they can have one of those Oklahoma games where they shoot themselves out of it. So, but in the South region, I think I'd have to go with Alabama hopping out of that. What do you think?
Yeah, I wouldn't go against you in that. And I love Nate Oates, man. He's a great coach, and obviously they have some dynamic players over there. Just as I'm sitting here looking at their bracket, I think I'd agree with you in that. I'd take Alabama coming out of that region, but I've really got my eye on Charleston. They've been playing some great ball all year long. And it kind of pains me to say that because I'm also a big Tony Bennett fan, and it looks like there's a collision course there to go to the Sweet 16 between those two. And I know it's not the most appealing type of basketball that Virginia plays, but, man, as far as the defensive coach and the type of guys that he recruits, like, to his system that isn't filled with McDonald's All-Americans or five-stars, I think Tony Bennett does a great job. But I think overall, coming out of the South region, I'll agree with you in seeing Alabama be able to survive in advance.
So as we go down to the East, which will play the South in the Final Four in Houston, Purdue, number one seed, I think well-deserving. I think we had three number one seeds set before the conference tournament. That fourth one was up in the air. It could have been UCLA or Arizona, whoever won the Pac-12, and then it could have been Purdue, which it was. And then Purdue ran through the Big 12 tournament, almost gave it away at the end. They've got one of the most interesting players in the country, and Zach Edey, the second you meet him, you'll know that he's interesting because he's a massive, massive human being. 7'4". I don't know how much he weighs, but he's thick. And actually has really good touch around the basket. And he forces you into something that you haven't faced all year. Like, I don't know how you change your defense against him, because you can just throw it up. Think about if we played him. Ernest would be okay with it, but he's going to have 8-9 inches on KJ. I mean, it's crazy. So he gets you something you haven't seen a lot. As you look through the rest of this bracket, you know, we got some Big 12ers in there with Kansas State. But then, you know, Kentucky, this is kind of the so-called blue blood one. You got Kentucky and Duke in there. And Duke is a 5 seed, which is very interesting. They're playing as well as anybody in the country at this point. And then Marquette's right there with them. Former Texas head coach Shaka Smart has done a fantastic job with Marquette, and they've got some guys that can really shoot it. They've got a little lefty guard named Kolick that reminds me of one of my teammates, Rex Walters. I mean, he just seems to slither through there. He's a great passer. Rex wasn't a very good passer because he shot all the time, but this kid, when I watch this little, I say little kid, when I watch this lefty for Marquette, that's what resonates with me. And Wayne, you know, me and Rex have our little headbutts and group text barbs. So, but that's me giving credit to this kid for being a lot like Rex. Now, of course, Wayne, what would happen if I compared this kid to Rex? What would Rex say?
He'd be pretty upset because Michael Jordan's probably the only comparison that he would think is fair. But we expect that out of Rex, so we love him because he's one of the ultimate competitors that's ever come through this Kansas program. But I think the East region is absolutely brutal. Obviously, just from a namesake standpoint, you see some of the, you know, top teams coming out of there. I actually have Oral Roberts beating Duke in the first round because no one wants to cheer for Duke. but also Paul Mills is doing a phenomenal job at NYU.
The only school out of Oklahoma to make it. How about that?
Yeah, that's pretty unbelievable. I thought Oklahoma State probably got hosed a little bit on the selection process, but I'm gonna take Marquette coming out of the East.
I thought it was kind of interesting that Michigan State got in, and no one really said much about that. Michigan State was 19-12, and don't they have the second longest consecutive streak of NCAA tournaments? I was kind of looking at it like Kansas has the longest. Haven't missed a tournament since 1989, the year after the national title. But
if the committee can say they give consideration for dropping Kansas down the one seed line because of Coach Self's absence, I'm sure they can probably give a little bit more accreditation to a guy like Tom Izzo, who's been one of the all time great college coaches as of late. So maybe that helped him a little bit.
Didn't even talk about Kansas State. They're in that as well. They're the three seed in that East. You know, you got Marquette and Purdue ahead of them, but I'm with you. I kind of have Oral Roberts beating Duke. As much as I said Duke was a hot team, Memphis will be an interesting matchup with Purdue if they were to both chalk. Not sold on USC or Michigan State down the way, but Kentucky and Providence. You know, that's a Providence team that we saw last year that we were able to beat to get to the Elite Eight, and Ed Cooley does a great job up there, and he'll be a guy that'll be discussed at some other jobs as well. But he's been there a while and has really, really done a nice job. So if I had to pick, I'm going to go with Purdue. Who'd you pick?
Marquette.
Okay. We got to be a little different. We can't just agree all the time. Not that we typically agree very often. We're going to save the best for last. I mean, let's go with the Midwest, even though it was a hose job that we're not in the Midwest. But, oh, well, we'll deal with it. We'll drop the mid. We'll head to the West. But Houston, Northern Kentucky, not real worried about them. Iowa and Auburn will be an interesting matchup. Miami, Florida against Drake will be I'd have Miami in that one. Indiana, a common opponent we had this year. We blew them out, but they got one of the best players in the country in Trace Jackson Davis. Then you got Iowa State, got somewhat rewarded with not the seed, but, you know, they're a six, but they get to go to Des Moines. What do you think about that?
That's actually a little surprising. And, gosh, I think I actually like them to go to the Sweet 16. I think they're going to win that play-in game with between Mississippi State or Pitt, and then they play the winner of Xavier, Kennesaw State. I got Kennesaw State winning that, and I got Iowa State.
Let me ask you that, though. Why do you have Kennesaw State?
They're a hot team as well. You know, we were talking about players earlier. Sharif Abdul-Rahim's little brother is down there, and he's been doing a great job. I actually started following Kennesaw State because Coach Fred Quarterbaum's son, Mason, actually went to school there last year. He's since transferred. But that's had me watching the Owls a little bit more closer. They upset a strong Liberty team in their conference championship to be able to get them the bid. And so they're coming in with lots of momentum, and they're a real energized and athletic team coming in. So
Well, speaking of momentum and this matchup next, we look at Texas A&M and Penn State. A lot of people were upset at Texas A&M being a 7 because they played in the SEC championship game. But there's an example where they looked at a strength of schedule in the non-con, because Texas A&M, number one, didn't play a very tough non-con and lost some games to some really bad teams. But turned out to where it's all – the question I would have for the committee is, how much do you consider seeding lines when it comes to timing? Granted, they something must have been going on. They weren't playing well in November. They lost to some bad teams. But they were playing as good as anybody in the SEC late in the year and into the tournament. Obviously, as they got to the championship game, ended up 25-9, but got a 7 seed. So that was a little surprising. And the team they're playing played in the Big Ten championship game, and they ended up being 22-13, but got a 10 seed. And Penn State can shoot it. And I don't know if they shoot it well, but they shoot it a lot.
Yeah, it's tough for me to hitch my wagon to teams that that are really, really good shooters, because it only takes one off night, especially in a neutral site, maybe in a gym that you have not played in. You know, it's a little different in during conference play. And so, as hot as Penn State has been from behind the 3-point arc, I think I'm gonna steer clear of them going a little bit too far into this tournament.
You're gonna take athletes over shooters.
I think in that matchup, yes.
Then the last matchup of that would be Texas and Colgate, and that's gonna be my pick to make it to the Final Four. I think they're gonna get Timmy Allen back. I actually think they play better without Timmy Allen. I think he's kind of a ball dominator, and he kind of slows them down. I thought their flow and their rhythm against us was a lot better without Timmy Allen out there just kind of pounding it and backing people down. I think it makes them stagnant, and they were just playing more of their three-man motion out top. And, you know, we allowed them to have, I don't know, 8 layups as opposed to Timmy Allen kind of clogging it up. Could completely be wrong. Maybe we just caught him on a good night, but I got Texas coming out of that.
Yeah, I got Texas coming out of this region too, and I think Timmy Allen actually helps them. Ball dominant, yes. I think he adds a grittiness to him. Dude talks a lot of stuff. I love every time that he's on the court. There's some chirpiness that goes on.
It's weird that you like guys that talk a lot, because you didn't talk a lot, mainly because Roy wouldn't let us, but.
No, I only fired unless fired upon, and I kind of had a unique trash talking flavor.
Give me an example.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily direct it to guys. I would talk to a guy like Aaron Miles about the guy that was either guarding me or talking trash to me.
I
think seven a good night, huh? I mean, this stuff like that. I don't need to get into that because that was years ago. It's about. These guys now, but certainly have Texas coming out of this region. And again, to our point earlier, we were discussing, hey, it's not bad when you see other Big 12 teams do well, just to kind of to show the flex on our conference. Though I still have a little bit of disdain for Texas as they're leaving the Big 12. Not because they're leaving the Big 12, but I felt like they've held us hostage for years and years and years with their preferences about conference expansions and additions and things like that and TV networks. So I'm not sad to see them leave, but I will be pulling for them this one last time this tournament to see them get out of the Midwest.
What is it about teams that leave the Big 12 for the SEC that makes them win our conference tournament right before they leave and really pisses us off?
Who else did that?
Missouri.
Oh, did they? I've forgotten about that already.
2012.
Hmm.
Yeah, and they were super annoying with their SEC chance. But they won it. All right. They didn't really – haven't had a great 10 years since then. But
How good is that matchup going to be if they can keep this momentum going next year in the Sprints – or in the T-Mobile Center, right?
Yeah.
We go and we play – I don't think it's the final installment – of our home and away, but it's
I think it's the third.
Yeah, it is a third, but this will be in a neutral site, so that'll make it pretty good.
I'm not sure if it's our season ticket or theirs. I'm trying to, or maybe they're doing 50-50, but that'll be great. So far, Alabama, I've got Purdue, you got Marquette, we both have Texas. So now we're going to agree on 3 out of the 4 of these, because I can't imagine you're going to pick anybody but Kansas out of the West, right?
No, of course not. I'm going to do it just like I've done all the way since I was like 6 years old. You start with Kansas in the middle of national champions, and then you just work your way backwards.
Who did you pick when you were 5?
No, I wasn't. I didn't even know what was going on when I was 5. So,
For some reason, at 6, you just became a Kansas fan.
I started studying the analytics and the quad one wins and all the net rankings and all that. Just I learned math and it came to me. And
you took a
bracketologist.
Didn't Leavenworth offered a analytics course, right?
So, yeah, it was at the CGSC school up on the 411 work.
So I was in Kansas playing Howard. You know how much I like to talk about myself, as you're very aware. I played against Howard 1992 NCAA tournament. We won by 33 points. You already know this answer, but before I told you this, did you know how many I scored against Howard in 1992?
I did not, but I figured it was going to be pretty efficient, to say the least. Otherwise, you wouldn't have brought it up.
I wouldn't have brought it up, and the number of minutes played makes sense because I didn't play very much. My points per minute was very high. It would have been 56 because I scored 7 points in 5 minutes. Had a big dunk in that game. I know a lot of people.
Okay.
I know a lot of people see this and don't realize my former body and athleticism, even though you saw it a little bit as a youngster idolizing a 6'5" white kid from Leawood.
I wasn't worth 33, but it was already taken. Brian Nass had already had 33. In your honor, so I had to settle for 23 when I got here. So Rex Walters was in second.
23? All right, so 1 versus 16, Kansas versus Howard. I get it. Moving forward, Arkansas and Illinois. Arkansas, SEC, athletic. They got a guy who's going to be a top 10 lottery pick, Nick Smith. And then Illinois. Both of these teams kind of underachieved this year, at least per the preseason rankings. Now, Arkansas had some injuries. They had a guy about 6'8" jumper named Brazil, who was really good, and he tore his knee up. So that hurt him, and Nick Smith missed a lot of time this year, but he is back and playing at a high level. We have a little bit of knowledge, not me and you, but our team and our coaches have a little knowledge of Illinois because that was the team that we had our – I don't know why we call it a secret practice because it wasn't a secret.
It was on the schedule.
It was so, but even our guys referenced it last night, like, or the reporters did, the secret practice we had against Illinois. Like, okay, so I'm going to lose the secret. The practice we had against Illinois was back in October, and and it wasn't a real game. It's kind of like when you go watch our practice, there's time and situational basketball, different things that are put in there to where you're playing against somebody that you're not used to, you know, they're not used to your plays. They don't know your plays. So you want to see how to work against somebody else. And these coaches are starting to gravitate towards these secret practices to accomplish that as opposed to playing you know, four name directional school that you're going to win by 67.
It was a real game. You know, I mean, they got real officials there and, you know, you're working on real stuff and, you know, it's a real segment. I prefer not to play Arkansas just because of their length and athleticism. Early in November, I actually thought Arkansas had Final Four type capability. Now, again, they hadn't quite showed that since then. You'll like this. One of our Jayhawk brothers who has a deep affinity for all things Arkansas, Nick Bradford, he and I talk pretty regularly, and he was always making sure that this team was on our radar. So I watched them quite a bit this year, and they've just got some components that don't match up to us in terms of speed and depth and playing above the rim that just make me a little uneasy. And so I think that we match up better against Illinois, though I think, you know, Brad Underwood is a terrific coach and could certainly have his guys ready there. But if I had my choice in who we would play coming out of that 8-9, it would certainly be Illinois.
Take a look at their records. Arkansas 20-13, Illinois 20-12. So obviously, several losses. I mean, they're not a perfect team, but it's a couple names of that 8-9, which you typically get. You look at the other 8-9s, Iowa and Auburn. You look at West Virginia and Maryland. You look at Memphis and Florida Atlantic. That would be the one 8-9 matchup that doesn't have kind of household names, even though Memphis, what Penny Hardaway is, but it is interesting to see what those 8-9s look like. Back-to-back elite eights for Arkansas. Eric Musselman has done a really good job down there, but hasn't quite gotten over the hump. But he's right there. And, again, injuries hurt him, and they were ranked pretty high. So that'll be we play at 1 o'clock on Thursday. That'll be right after our game. So I'm going to stick around and watch that with Wayne, and we'll take notes and have an adult beverage and watch some good basketball, figure out who I'm assuming a win for us, but it's only happened once before. So find some wood to knock on, but that's the way it's going to look like in Des Moines in that two-game tournament. And as you dig down in the bracket, St. Mary's and Virginia Commonwealth play on the other end, along with UConn and Iona, an Iona team coached by Rick Pitino. So you obviously know they're going to be – it's going to be quite a matchup for UConn. And, you know, UConn's an interesting one. Man, I saw them earlier this year, and they look great. And then they went on a bit of a skid. But one of those four teams, if we were to get out of Des Moines, is who we would face. So St. Mary's West Coast Conference shared the league title with Gonzaga, and then UConn probably advance. Down below, as you look at the possibilities for an Elite Eight matchup, obviously UCLA is the two and Gonzaga is the three. You got TCU in there lurking. TCU probably going to play Gonzaga in that second round game. That'll be one to watch. TCU almost knocked off Arizona last year and probably should have. And then down below, UCLA and UNC Asheville. So, Northwestern had a great year with Chris Collins. How do you look at the rest of this bracket?
I want to say Gonzaga out of this, probably because one of Coach Self's former players and a dear friend of mine, Roger Powell, is an associate head coach for the Zags, who's done a phenomenal job. But doesn't it feel like there's been like an anticipation for a Kansas-Gonzaga matchup for a long time, but it just has never really manifested? I mean, we've seen some other big matchups, you know, with a lot of other teams on this bracket and teams that are considered blue bloods. I'm not quite ready to put Gonzaga in that category just yet. But out of all the matchups, you know, just what I'm looking at across all these names, the one that hasn't quite happened for us is playing Gonzaga. And I think that a lot of people have been, there have been Final Four matchups where people predicted, and obviously, you know, the parity of the tournament has hindered that. But I think a lot of people, including myself, are waiting for that KU-Gonzaga matchup, and I'm kind of hopeful that's the case in the Midwest.
I'm hopeful, too, because that means what? We're going to be in the Elite Eight. And once you get to the Elite Eight, you got to beat good teams to advance. And I hope it happens. I just want to be there. If it's UCLA, it's UCLA. I mean, they're dealing with some injuries. They've got one guy is out for the rest of the tournament, the Pac-12 Defensive Player of the Year. And they just had another injury, and they lost Arizona by two, a healthy Arizona team. So I thought it was a bit of a dig or a gut punch, whatever, that they were rewarded with the West 5 hours from Vegas. It's a two seed, and then Gonzaga, also a West Coast team, able to go to Vegas where they play their conference tournaments. So familiarity of that, I don't know. I keep, you know, piling on to this, like I want our guys to listen to us, like I know they won't, but be like, yeah, we are kind of getting screwed. All right, I'm gonna be a little pissed off, and I can't wait to be on that podium in Houston and talk a little trash to Chris Reynolds and the rest of the committee. Really difficult job, not just singling out Chris Reynolds. He's got the unfortunate or fortunate duty of having to address the nation. There's no right answers. I mean, the only right answers are the ones you want to hear as a Kansas fan. You know, The Houston fans don't care what we think. Nobody else does except us. So I get it. I'm just a homer and I'm biased and I don't care. How's that?
Well, hey, thanks for putting that out there, because I don't think any of us would have pinned you as that.
Right. Yeah, I'm a little, I wouldn't say I'm pissed off, but I'm like, yeah, you think reigning national champs, did everything the committee told us to do, schedule tough, win tough games, number one strength of schedule, right? I don't know if you can do much better than that. I'm not smart as you, but it seems to be number one. 27 wins. Obviously, we didn't get to 30, but it was the toughest conference in America. So, all right, I'm done complaining until the next complaint, okay?
How about the next episode when we see what's all transpired?
So you and I are going to head up to Iowa Tuesday and Wednesday, take it all in, go to Fong's Pizza, go to Zombie Burgers. We're going to be downtown Des Moines. Check out all of our social channels, KU social channels, for information about where fans can go to catch the glimpse of the team, the open practice. You can always contact me at the Williams Fund or Kansas Athletic Development. We got several names now, but I'm pretty easy to reach. Got a couple phones, a laptop, an iPad. Am I hard to find? And I'm pretty big.
Usually hear you before we see you.
Are you saying I talk a lot or I talk loud?
So you got a real distinctive voice that people love to listen to, and that it's famous.
That is so kind. Thank you, buddy. But final thoughts before we close up shop.
Tournament is supposed to be hard, man. Let's go get it.
First step, 2-game tournament in familiar territory, albeit Des Moines. Outside of Ames, Texas is going to be in Des Moines. Iowa State's going to be in Des Moines. Obviously, big fan bases for Arkansas and Illinois. So it'll be a fun atmosphere. It always is. I think our guys are ready. There's no more excuses. And listening to Coach Roberts address the team after the Texas game, he made a great statement. He was very much like, hey, I'm disappointed. You didn't play well. We didn't play well, but you did accomplish a lot this year. And we're going to find out tomorrow, which was Sunday, that we're going to be rewarded for that success. We're going to be a one seed. I don't know where we're going to go, but you guys should take pride in that. I want this to sting a little bit because we lost, and we lost in the way we lost, but there's much bigger things to accomplish. I thought it was a great message, and he built them back up because, you know, when you lose like that, you're in the locker room kind of just chin down. And he built them up and just said, hey, let's say nice things about Texas. Let's get our stuff together. Let's get back home, get some rest, and enjoy tomorrow. This is a fun time of year. You had to do that several times, obviously, because you never won the Big 12 tournament. It was always, I mean, the best year we had in my 4 years was when we went to a Final Four. And we lost in the semifinals to Kansas State. And it was a gut punch. We were the better team. And we lost. And we ended up being a 2 seed. But we were able to utilize that and kind of, we had a couple of, you know, Bill does it differently than Roy, as you know. We lost in the Big 12 tournament or Big 8 tournament. Came back and had a ball busting practice, like hard. And we're like, man, like we're trying to get ready for this. Bill, I mean, they didn't practice yesterday. They're just kind of doing some shooting. Like, it's more of a, I want your legs to be fresh. Now, we're not a very deep team either. So you got to set some guys, kind of like you did in 2018 with Svi, Malik, and Devontae.
Let the madness begin, my man.
Well, thanks, buddy. This was fun. We'll be back in person behind camera next time. But this has been the Jayhawker Podcast, brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. I'd like to thank the Hilton President Hotel for all the hospitality and sponsorship of this show and hospitality at the hotel last week. And we'll move forward. We'll do another one of these in Iowa, then win a couple games. And next might be in front of the bright lights and warm weather in Las Vegas. So stay tuned. Catch us on all your podcast platforms, Spotify, Apple, YouTube, wherever you get your podcasts. And as a reminder, check back and watch the podcast from last week with Jalen Wilson. I am Greg Gurley. This is the Jaguar Podcast brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. Big Dub, we'll see you in Iowa.
All right. See you soon, bud.
Rock chop.